welcome to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast. I am Beth Schenk, long-term host of the podcast, and our episode host this month is Millie Elia, who is speaking with Dr. Diana Baptiste, cardiovascular nurse practitioner, board member of the Preventive Cardiovascular Nurses Association, and proponent of healthy environments for better cardiovascular health.
Hello and welcome everybody to another Annie podcast. We are so thrilled to have our guest today, Dr. Diana Lynn Baptiste. Dr. Diana Lynn Baptiste is coming to us from PCNA. Dr. Baptiste, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself and your affiliations?
Sure. Thank you for having me today, Milagro. So my name is Diana Baptiste, and I'm currently an associate professor of nursing at the Johns Hopkins University. I specialize in cardiovascular community care and research. And so a little bit about me, my background, I started my nursing career 26 years ago in New York City as a public health nurse, and then moved into cardiovascular nursing, which I've been doing since then. And so the PCNA stands for the Preventive Cardiovascular Nurses Association. And I've been a member of PCNA for over a decade now. And I currently serve as a board member on their National Board of Directors, which has really been an exciting opportunity for me. I've, through this organization, I have made many contacts, many networks, and have gotten the opportunity to work with, to collaborate with other organizations that share the common goal of reducing cardiovascular risks. And just a little bit about me clinically. Clinically, I worked as a nurse on a cardiovascular step-down unit, providing direct care for patients after having heart attacks, open heart surgeries, and treating those with hypertension and heart failure mostly. So yeah, that's me.
Thank you so much for that. And just diving a little bit deeper into your journey, what drew you to cardiac nursing?
Wow, that's a good question. So I was actually drawn to cardiac nursing while I was in nursing school. And so, as you know, in nursing school, nurses learn every single system. And so many of the systems I found very intriguing. You know, we did neuro, we did endocrine. But when I got to cardiovascular, it just made sense. It just really, I was very intrigued on how the heart controls everything, right? Just like the brain does. However, the heart, one of the things that was really interesting to me is when I learned about heart failure, and I saw that how heart failure, when it exacerbates, it causes this very domino effect for other organs. It affects the lungs, the liver, and the kidneys. And so from that point on, I felt like I had such a strong understanding about heart failure, and I wanted to do something to help heart failure patients. So as I progressed in my career, I worked with heart failure patients a lot. I collaborated with the heart failure clinic over at Johns Hopkins. And then my doctoral project was actually on improving heart failure outcomes through educating patients on how to improve their self-care. So it's just something I've been interested in for over 25 years now, and I'm really happy that I chose it.
Excellent. Thank you for that insight into your journey. And with such expertise and having such a seasoned nursing background, why do you think, our big question today on this podcast is, why environmental health is a cardiac nursing issue?
Oh, absolutely. So I don't think it's been known for very long, but we're learning more and more through the research that our environmental has a heavy influence on our overall health. And cardiovascular disease is one of those that are truly or more directly influenced by the environmental in which our patients live. So if we start with social determinants of health, SDOH, as we refer it to, teaches us that our patient's lived environment does have an impact on how long they live. And so, for example, is people living in like low income and urban settings will typically have a lower life expectancy. And so as cardiovascular nurses, we wanted to dig into that a little bit deeper and find out exactly why. And so what we found in the science is that air pollution is scientifically linked to frailty, to neural inflammation, which all increases your risk for developing cardiovascular disease. And so the people who are living in more highly polluted areas typically will have an alarming higher prevalence of heart failure or hypertension due to that neuroinflammation. One of the things I also, which I'm still learning, which is really an exciting learning experience for me, is I'm learning on like a deeper level that the fine particulate matter or PM 2.5 as they call it, is a pollutant that often will enter the lungs and enter the bloodstream and cause that direct inflammation that increases cardiovascular disease risk. And so this is something that many nurses, cardiovascular nurses like myself, weren't really aware of until recently. So this is research that's evolving and something that we really need to pay attention to.
Oh, I 100%, 100%, and I completely understand that specialized knowledge that begins to link those common denominators like PM 2.5. My background as an oncology nurse practitioner, we know that that same link of underlying systemic inflammation is a common denominator among these disease processes, whether it be cancer or cardiac. And so that infiltration of that of those airborne pollutants absolutely is a factor. And that science is evolving fast and furiously. And to your point about social determinants of health, that absolutely falls into that category of the lived environments in which we live and eat and work and breathe and raise our children in. And we can begin to see after generations and generations this legacy of inherited environmental impact on communities' health. And I think that's a wonderful way to highlight the importance of today's topic with you.
Absolutely, I agree.
Now, having said that, in the big environmental picture around environmental health, what is your biggest concern? Is it air pollution and that PM 2.5 that you spoke of? Are there any other environmental concerns that happen collaterally or parallel to this?
One of the So one of the concerns I have is focused on a very small and easy solution, right? And that's green space. As we know, many urban cities and different places, even in the suburbs, green spaces are getting smaller and smaller. Even where I live, I see where they are knocking down trees, putting out more sidewalks, widening streets and highways. So we're becoming a little bit more industrialized than we have been before. And so, with that being said, my biggest concern is that a lack of green space is going to continue increasing the risk for these environmental hazards. And so, coming from an underserved background myself, growing up in an urban place that had very little green space, there's also a psychological benefit of green space, right? So studies have shown that people who more green space is associated with longer life expectancy overall, and there's a lot of studies targeting this. And so green spaces promote physical activity, which we know is really important to reduce cardiovascular risks. One of the biggest problems I had when I took care of heart failure patients is I would casually, in my nursing education packet, I would read off and tell them, do more walking if if you can, walk through your neighborhood. But what I didn't consider is that they didn't really have walkable spaces, right? So physical activity, if someone lives in a place with less green space, then they could be less likely to have outdoor physical activity or outdoor contact at all, right? One of the things that also influence cardiovascular risk or increased cardiovascular risk is isolation. And so, especially a lot of our older adults, they're getting out a lot less. What we're finding is that increased exposure to green spaces are associated with reduced all-cause mortality. It also, because it assists with, it helps improve also mental well-being, lower incidence of cardiovascular diseases are all connected to green spaces. So, planting more trees, having more grass in our cities is very important, even if we start small with patches of grasses, because it's not just an aesthetic. It really does influence our health and how we take in our environment. And so that's my biggest concern, is really that we need to be focusing on the smaller solutions, right? As we know, pollution is definitely a huge issue.
I hear you 100%, and I love, 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 love that you brought in that you spoke about the mental health aspect of this, because we know as nurses, regardless of our specialty, that hypertension and the ability to relax are key. They just go together. One impacts the other, influences the other. And so when you have these urban, using urban settings as an example, this lack of green spaces in a community that is already impacted by chronic health illnesses like hypertension, having the ability to socialize in a community outdoor setting, being able, what you talk about, prevention and the advice we would normally give our patients to go out and walk. If you have a if you live in an area that is has poor air quality and a lack of green spaces, and then you add in other variables like, let's say it's the summertime and we're having an extreme heat wave due to climate change. Then how do you begin? Then how do you begin to advise patients in preventative care or even in symptoms management? So each one of these factors are absolutely key in the bigger picture. So thank you for bringing that up.
Join our forums and committees to connect with fellow nurses who are leading the way on health and the environment. These are to share knowledge, collaborate on solutions, and amplify your voice in this important work. Learn more and sign up at environ.org.
I'm going to go ahead and move on to your organization, PCNA, is a wonderful partner to Annie. And can you talk to us a little bit about why PCNA thought it was a valuable asset to join our nursing collaborative on climate and health, and what that looks like for your organization?
Yeah, so PCNA are really excited to partner with other national organizations that are focused on improving the health for all. One of the things that PCNA does well is that through these collaborations, we actually develop action plans for advocacy. So thinking about Annie and the work that you're doing, the PCNA, we're really excited to not only collaborate on projects and presentations and getting the word out about the environmental impacts of cardiovascular disease, but we're also here to as stakeholders and to engage in advocacy to change how our patients are living, to create programs that's going to improve their surroundings. And so at PCNA, we can't do it all by ourselves. So it's the collaboration itself that's going to help us drive these initiatives forward. PCNA has we've had long-standing partnerships with many organizations such as the American Heart Association, the American Black Cardiologists, and the American Colleges of Cardiology, and so on. So collaborating with Annie through these efforts, it's so important, and it's such a part of how we drive our mission to reducing cardiovascular risks for the populations that we serve.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much. And with regards to just looking at in the space of advocacy, do you have any ideas, specifically speaking to the cardiac nurses, how they can add their voice to advocacy, maybe in the community setting, maybe at the legislative setting, maybe within the institutional setting to help mitigate some of what we talked about in terms of air quality, green spaces? What would that look like?
Yeah, I think nurses are uniquely positioned to become advocates, and nurses can advocate on any level. It could be on your local level in your communities. You can advocate through faith-based organizations, city councils, on the national level, federal government level. We need to have a seat at all of these tables, and many of us do already. One of the things that PCNA does well is that we do have an advocacy day where we go up to Capitol Hill and we speak with legislators, and we advocate for different legislation that will improve the health and prevent cardiovascular disease. Other advocacy efforts don't have to be in person. You can do them online. You can write letters to your local congressman. You can meet with city council members via Zoom. There's so many ways we can advocate. One of the ways we can also advocate is through the science. One of the things that nurses have done very well in the past is writing calls to action papers, and having those, or policy brief papers, and having those published in national journals to get the word out about what is happening. Because one of my biggest concerns is that there's still a lack of understanding of how our lived environment impacts our overall health. And nurses know this, and they serve, they nurses play a critical role in advocating for the improvement of community health, whether we're advocating for more green space, less pollution, better knowledge about these issues. We can do it all. So one of the things that we could do is we don't have to do this individually. We can connect ourselves with organizations like Annie and PCNA to help drive our efforts and advocacy forward.
Wonderful. And I'm going to paraphrase that and put an exclamation point behind what you said. Follow the science, because the science doesn't change, even as administrations change, even as maybe things like the EPA repealing things like the endangerment finding, the science remains clear. And it sounds like you're saying, and I 100% echo that, it is important for nurses to be upfront at the table and continuing to support what the evidence-based science says, as we are at that point of care and we understand the implications to the patient sitting in front of us and to the community to which that patient belongs. We understand what the implications is like no other. And that's why we are so trusted. So we need to leverage that trust. I so plus, 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 plus. I love that. Now, PCNA, as an organization, how can nurses get involved? How can they become, join your organization if they're not already? Although I know you have, I forget how many members, but it is quite a large organization. Please tell us more about how we can join.
Oh, thank you. So PCNA, anyone can join. We do have a lot of members. I can't remember the number now, but it's very high. But what I can tell you is that our membership comprises of nurses and advanced practice nurses, which include across all of the advanced practice specialties, FNPs, nurse anesthetists, adult general nurse practitioners, We also have pediatric nurse practitioners and all. So we're a very diverse group at PCNA. And so, and also just want to note, you don't have to be a cardiovascular nurse to join PCNA. Just want to be interested in preventing cardiovascular disease, which also connects to a lot of the problems that we have outside of cardiovascular, which could include oncology. Those with cancer will often have cardiovascular disease as a secondary condition. Looking at people who have renal failure and also extending to those cardiometabolic disorders such as diabetes, obesity, hyperlipidemia. So really this PCNA is not all things cardiac. But remember, it doesn't matter your specialty, all patients have a heart. So so we all should be involved. So to get involved with PCNA, you can visit PCNA.net and apply for membership. And once you apply for membership, we also in there's also opportunities to volunteer with PCNA. And so typically our members will go online and complete a membership, sorry, a leadership volunteer form. And so we have so many opportunities to volunteer, whether it be in the community, online. We engage nurses in continuing education programs. So you can not only take the courses that we apply, that we offer, but you could also teach in some of the courses that we offer as well. So we invite all nurses to join PCNA, all nurses to contribute to our mission, all nurses to contribute to what we do in advocacy, education, research. And I also have to put in a plug. PCNA is also offering two $100,000 grants this year to fund research. So please, if you are doing any type of research that is focused on preventing cardiovascular disease, please consider applying. You can visit the website PCNA.net, and you can learn more about the grants that we have open, and also our continuing education programs. And we also provide guidelines and tools for nurses to use in clinical practice as well. We have several toolkits on there that are free of charge for our members.
Phenomenal. I'm going to be sure to add the PCNA website to our show notes. So if anyone is listening to this and didn't just wants a quick hyperlink to join, you can look for that in our show notes. It'll be there. Phenomenal opportunities. And I can say, having had the honor of participating in the most recent PCNA conference, what a wealth of resources. What an engaged community. I would absolutely, as you said, everyone has a heart. This is core to and integral to every nursing specialty. And it is absolutely linked to our health and wellness of every aspect, and from microcellular to organ, other organs. As an oncology nurse practitioner, I absolutely understand when you said the cardiotoxicity that is linked to many chemotherapeutic drugs, and the importance of cross-specialty collaboration. So yes, absolutely. Please join PCNA. You'll find the link on our show notes. And as we begin to this was a phenomenal interview. Thank you so much for being our guest today. As we begin to close out, is there anything else that you would like to add before we leave? Any words of wisdom or just anything at all?
Yeah, I thank you. Well, first of all, I want to thank you for having me today. This has just been a great conversation, and just really excited about the collaboration at PCNA and Annie will have moving forward. But as I leave the session, I always think about the lessons that I learned along the way. And one of the things that I'd like to leave you to say is that, for nurses, whether you're a nurse or a nurse practitioner, always ask your patients about their lived environment. It really does have an impact about their how they are healing, how they are managing their health, and also an impact on the new or emerging conditions that they might have. We just have to always dig a little bit deeper and see what they are dealing with outside of just taking their medicines or keeping up with their appointments or watching their laboratory numbers going up and down. We really want to get to know them and see what they are living with every single day, and so that we can learn more about how we can treat them on a more individual with a more individualized approach.
Love that. And you, that really speaks to the holistic core of our profession, and
Absolutely.
absolutely to not siloing, not siloing our perspective when we are assessing and addressing issues that may come up with our patients, and really looking at their, to your point, their lived environment as part of their care plan, as part of how we're engaging with them. So thank you for that. Very valuable point. And as we close up today, I just want to welcome, thank everybody for joining us. And please join us again for our next podcast. This is Milagros Elia. I am the Program Manager of Climate and Clean Energy at the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments. And thank you again, Dr. Baptiste. It was a great pleasure to speak with you today. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Thank you to Millie and to Dr. Diana Baptiste. I love the application of environmental health issues to Dr. Baptiste's area of practice and leadership. And thank you all for listening to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast, which is 100% non-commercial. Please share with your nursing colleagues, family, and friends. Thank you, and talk to you next time.